Watch The Atheist Experience live Sundays at 4:30 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/ytaxp and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callaxp.
It's time to get sexy on Secular Sexuality.
And welcome to Secular Sexuality, the only ACA show coming to you from a femboy cave. My name is Christy Powell, and I'm joined tonight by one of those TikToking, Instagram, atheist influencer types. Welcome, Eve Was Framed.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. That's the perfect intro. One of those sorts of things.
Yeah, I can't pretend to fully understand it, but that doesn't mean I don't really love your content. We've got plenty of good things to talk about tonight.
Thank you. Thanks. I'm so excited to be here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so we're going to be talking about patriarchy and the day-to-day sexism of everyday life. So give us a call with your stories and your questions. We're at 512-991-9242, or you can reach us at tiny.cc/callsex because the show is coming right now. Okay, well, you know it. I say it every week, but it still remains true. The best way to get to know somebody is to find out exactly what turns them on. So, Eve, can you tell us a little bit about what's got you worked up right now?
Sure. I usually would be a book or a show, but I've been so busy lately. But I'm still trying to prioritize getting out of purity culture. It's something that's going to take me, I think, the rest of my life to deprogram from. But sure. I have found that sexy pajamas, sleeping in something that makes me feel really sexy for no reason, not for a partner, not for pictures, not for content, just for myself, is been so empowering. Like going to bed in something that makes me, you know, something comfortable, not just like, I mean, unless you are really into uncomfortable lingerie, that's fine too.
But right, yeah, I mean, that's got its own place.
Yeah, totally. But something silky, something sensual feeling. And then in the morning, doesn't matter how crazy my hair is or if I forgot to take my makeup off, I'm like wearing something that makes me feel empowered. So later when I'm wearing my, old jeans or whatever, I'm like, well, yeah, but I know how I'm going to look later tonight by myself.
I know in my head. No, I love that idea. I feel like we get so wrapped up in the performance of sexuality, of wanting to look hot and wanting to draw people in. And that's great. But there's something beautiful about taking the time and the effort to just enjoy that shit for yourself.
Yes. I've been spending more money on what I wear to sleep by myself than what I wear in outfits to like go out and be around people. And I'm loving it right now. So
hey, it's your money. You should be enjoying it. Glad to hear it. I appreciate the recommendation.
Yes.
I'll tell folks what's got me turned on right now is an old one, something I think I've probably even talked about on this show before, but it lined up so much with everything that we're going to be discussing tonight. And that's Burnout, The Secret to Unlocking the Stress Cycle. This is an incredible book by Amelia and Emily Nagoski. Emily Nagoski in particular is a voice we talk about on this show all the time. And I really encourage people to check out this audiobook in particular. The audio version is a hell of a lot of fun. We'll probably get into it a little bit later, but they get so tired and frustrated with the amount of time that they spend talking about the patriarchy in this conversation around burnout and around all of the invisible pressures that are put particularly on women in our society, that they eventually just had to start shorthanding it to patriarchy. And I hear that sound effect in my head like every time I turn on the news or every time I see some terrible headline. And so I think we're going to be using that a little bit tonight.
That's perfect. I need to listen to that. It sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And honestly, who in this world right now, in this like COVID political bullshit. I mean, you've seen it. You feel the existential malaise. Like, we're all going through it. Who is not experiencing some level of burnout? It's a really, really excellent read.
Love that.
Yeah. Well, so I've already hinted at it a little bit, but now that we're getting into it, I guess I'll start by saying I'm really not in the habit of apologizing for the topics we discuss on this show. And yet I can't help but kind of feel like I can already hear the teeth grinding and the clatter of keyboards as we start to talk about the patriarchy and the nearly invisible ways that sexism can show up in daily life. Do you think it's fair for me to feel anxious about how people respond to this topic?
Oh, 100%. I think that was one of the weirdest things. I grew up in the evangelical church, and coming out of it, I thought that I could talk openly about the patriarchy and about sexism and not like, this is going to be something that the majority of us would agree on. And I was shocked at the pushback. And it's also a really, I don't want to say sensitive topic, but it's something that we have to approach carefully because it impacts all of us in different ways. And so bringing intersectionality into that and even addressing the ways it impacts men, I think is really important. So definitely feel apprehension talking about it every time.
Yeah, I mean, it truly is universal. And we want to, I think it's important that we recognize that we spectrumize these things a little bit. And we recognize that everybody, even those, you know, cishet white men that like we're all kind of tired of talking about, they're negatively impacted too.
Absolutely.
We can recognize that it's not the same impact and that definitely people are carrying it and experiencing it in different ways, but this is something that's just kind of in the air we breathe.
Yeah, totally. It is universal, as you said. And I think a lot of complaints that men have when they talk, you know, when they don't want to hear about the patriarchy, when I've talked to them further about it, they realize some of their complaints about feminism is brought on specifically because of patriarchy. So it's just important to cover all of that.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, you've made something of a name for yourself dissecting evangelical culture, talking about, you know, purity culture and these things online. What kind of reactions or pushback do you get having those conversations?
I get a lot of pushback. I don't hold back when I talk about these things. I just made a post on TikTok the other day about purity culture. And within 10 minutes, I had a cishet white male commenting saying that he thinks that purity culture is great and it's family values and that we have to have it, et cetera, et cetera. And the first thought in my head was to go look and see his following list. And he was following hundreds of underage girls where the only content they post is, you know, in bikinis and all of that. And that's not to shame their content. It's the hypocrisy that I see. And that's what I get a lot is pushback from people that are literally doing exactly what I'm speaking out against. And they don't even try to hide it. You know, I mean, I call it out and then suddenly they're, you know, deleting their profile. But yeah, I get a lot of pushback in regards to trying to act like this is something normal and we should want it. And then you see that they're participating in the same thing they say that they're against.
Yeah, there's nothing that I love more on the internet than somebody loudly proclaiming that a problem doesn't exist while being that problem. Like,
racism isn't real,
sexism doesn't exist. And I'm like, do you hear yourself when you say that, though?
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yep. And I get a lot of people, the majority of the pushback I get when it comes to sexism, it's men generally. And it's on the content where I'm not even addressing purity culture. I'm not addressing other stuff. They just choose to, because I'm a woman, say things that they would never say to a man talking about the things that I'm talking about. And that's where I see it play out, is these little subtle digs. And sometimes it's in their compliments. It's actually really sexist.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. Well, so let's talk about, I guess, the religion of it all. I mean, why should we be talking about sexism on the Atheist Experience Network? How does religion play into this conversation?
I think it's a huge part. I mean, I think the foundation of so many of the most popular religions in the world are patriarchal, they're sexist, and it's built that way to keep a hierarchy. You know, you have like God, men, and then women and children is how they like to divide it up, which is why they have a major problem with the LGBTQ plus community, because they can't fit them in that.
We don't
hierarchy.
Fit in your boxes.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, I think it is absolutely should be on the forefront of the conversation because it is at the basis of the very thing that we've hopefully deconstructed from and stepped away from or never participated in to begin with.
Yeah, it's such a sticky thing because religion, yes, it's all of these stories about, you know, people being eaten by whales and giant boats and sacrifices and all of these things. And we can think about the Bible in terms of the stories, but the reality is even long after we have gotten away from those things and kind of deleted that from our mind, there's so many just beliefs and ideologies that can follow us around kind of forever, especially if we're not actively working to deconstruct those things. And when everybody around us is holding on to those same beliefs, we can spend our entire lives without ever actually realizing that these notions of fate, of imminent justice, of things are supposed to be fair, are based on these flawed fairy tales. And I think that one of the best examples of that is the gender relationships that we have in this country, because they make no sense, right? Like if you delete that book, there's no reason that we would have otherwise like come to some of these conclusions about, right, you know, women doing dishes and men taking out the trash. Like, why?
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a great point you're making about having to unlearn. Even if we're not actively participating in a religion, it still clings to you. And even people that haven't grown up in that, I mean, especially living in the South, even if you've never been to church, even if you've never participated in any religion, you're going to face that everywhere. In the workplace, it's part of the culture at this point. We've that's how we've survived, is the patriarchy. And we've evolved past that point now.
I'd like to think so. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, this is a little bit of a sidetrack, but just generally, when we talk about the Dobbs ruling, and when we see what's going on in the Supreme Court, and we're talking about the erosion of rights and some of these other things, is there reason to feel like sexism is increasing in our country? I mean, after decades and decades of seemingly forward progress, is it fair to say that things are getting worse, or is that reactionary?
No, I think things are getting worse in a way as a reaction. It's Christian nationalism is what it all stems from. That's what we're seeing happen with the Supreme Court. And, you know, at the base of Christian nationalism is patriarchy. That's what they're built on. And so, sure, I think as they are pushing back and as they're trying to gain that last bit of power, because I do think in the end, their numbers are dwindling. This is like their last ditch effort. I think we're going to see a lot more of that, unfortunately. And more than anything, I think it's kind of like a line is being drawn in the sand and people are taking sides, unfortunately. I mean, on the one hand, it's good for those of us that are choosing to stand on the side of progress, but then other people are blatantly saying, I'm an anti-feminist now. I mean, I don't think we've heard that in a while. It hasn't been relative to say that. And now people are coming out saying that. And it's just more pushback from Christian nationalism.
Yeah. You know, for much of my life, I've thought that it would be best if we could kind of push people to that point where they are having to actually say, no, plainly, I do not think that men are equal to women, or that white people and black people are these different kinds of things.
Yeah.
And now that we've gotten to that point, I don't know. It doesn't feel great.
It's a little scary. Yeah, it doesn't feel great. And it's, I think, at least I felt like we were past that point. And so now hearing people actively defend anti-feminism and actively speak out against anti-racism, like it's a good thing to speak out against, it is scary, because you see, while a lot of society is progressing, there are some that are demanding that we let them stay behind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, generally speaking, I feel like for most people, at least most people not on the internet, when asked like patriarchy, good or bad, are going to say bad, right? I'd like to think that that's the mindset. And yet, you know, here we are. So what do you suppose people miss or maybe misunderstand about the way patriarchy shows up in our culture?
The main thing I hear from people is most people think it doesn't exist anymore. Like, that's something that we don't have. It's a general misunderstanding of what patriarchy is. And it's kind of like white supremacy. In fact, I think the two are very intertwined,
sure,
in that it is culturally pervasive. Like it is everywhere. It is a part of us. And until we actively seek to get rid of it, it's always going to be there. I said something to a friend, and I've seen other people saying stuff like this online, about how it would be so cool if someday we have all women on the Supreme Court, or maybe like one guy. And we stopped for a second to think about that. And like, is that wrong? We've had Supreme Courts with nothing but men.
Without all even thinking about it.
Without questioning it. Yeah. And yet, you know, we get a woman as our vice president, and everyone's like losing their minds. And that's one woman. out of all of our leadership for, you know, years and years and years. It's wild. So yeah, patriarchy is from the very, very top to the very bottom, still fully part of our lives.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I am really interested in is that sort of invisibleness, right? The way that we, I mean, not nobody, but kind of generally as a society, there wasn't a whole lot of people going, you know, why isn't there a woman on the Supreme Court for the right. vast majority of American history? Like these things just sort of sneak under our radar, sometimes because we don't know to look for them, sometimes because we just don't want to look for them. So kind of in a broad sense, what do you suppose are some of the like general assumptions that people make about how men are this and women are this without really examining them?
Yeah. I think to your other point, before I move on to that one,
yeah.
I think women have been asking to be represented in those spaces for years and years and years, but because they weren't represented in those spaces, their voices weren't being heard. Mm. And Black women have been speaking on this for a really, really long time. They've been speaking to us about Roe v. Wade. We didn't listen. This is, look where we are now, things like that. But yeah, it shows up in little places. It shows up in the workplace all the time. I know a friend was talking about her boss, and we all just automatically assumed that her boss was a man.
Oh, sure.
And then when she was said she, we were all like, oh, because of the field that it was. Like our minds just automatically, as women even, are, you know, assume we place a man in these positions just because that's what we've grown accustomed to. We've become comfortable with it. And even just the whole thing of like who holds the door open and chivalry and then now trying to like even the playing field. And now women are like, I'm going to pay for this date and I'm going to be the one to ask him out. Now we're still not requiring work from men to dismantle the patriarchy. In fact, we're like lessening the burden sure. by doing that. So there's just lots of little micro things I think that come out even amongst really progressive people that because it's put in our brain and we have to deprogram and deconstruct from it.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me if this is a fair comparison. I hear often people will talk about, for instance, tipping as maybe sort of a broken institution and why don't yeah. we just pay people a living wage? And I'm definitely here for that conversation. But when I hear somebody say, well, we shouldn't tip, therefore I'm not gonna tip. I'm like, well, no, we still have to work like within right. the system as it exists now.
Yes.
Is that at all fair to compare when we're talking about who should pay for dinner, when we're talking about opening doors and getting the car and standing in the rain? Is that type of concern for women something that leads to contempt for them?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's very nuanced. Like, I'm not going to walk to my car alone if one of my trusted friends that's a you know big strong man is willing to walk me to my car because unfortunately it's not safe for me.
Sure. Under our current system that really is dangerous.
It's not safe. Yes. Would I love to be able to say like I got this, like I'm all good and I am fine. I know how to walk myself to my car. I know how to look out. I know how to be safe. Absolutely. But when I can, I'm going to take those necessary precautions. And it is up to each woman on how she wants to exercise you know her equal rights and what that looks like for her. But yeah, we are still living in a patriarchal society, just like we're living in capitalism. We have to interact with it as such until we've moved past a certain point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that the individualness that you highlighted is kind of the important piece here, because yeah. there are going to be, just statistically speaking, a lot of cishet relationships where the man is making more money than the woman. Mm-hmm. And perhaps that is a consideration about, well, which restaurant do we go to and who's going to pick up the check and these kinds of things. But when it becomes a mandate of the man pays, that's right. when it starts to feel problematic. I mean, is that a fair razor?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a huge thing. I also am a huge proponent of women making sure even in cishet relationships that they have their own bank account, even if they're making less, that whatever they do, they try to keep that little bit of safety buffer. It can be your soulmate, love of your life that you're going to be with the rest of your life. And still to keep that little bit of like, that's a way to bring equality, even if maybe you're not contributing the same because you're not able to get paid the same because you're a woman. Mm-hmm. But still, yeah, there's just different nuanced ways to balance it out, I think, without sacrificing yourself for the cause.
Sure. Well, do you have any personal insights, I suppose, on how to have those conversations, on how to be respectful of one another while also recognizing that, yeah, this is the system we're all operating under?
Yeah. I think just honesty and and being authentic. I think the more open women are with how they feel about this society, whether there's parts that they love that they're like, well, this part is really serving me, like, be honest with that. And let's talk about it and talk about why and talk about what it would look like otherwise. The parts that are scary, I think a lot of men don't understand the everyday things that women go through. I know they're starting to. We start talking about how scary it is walking in Target parking lots by ourselves and stuff like that. But there's so many different nuances that I don't even think of necessarily. But now that I'm starting to pay attention, I can take those to my partner and be like, by the way, I had to think through this whole scenario that you never would have had to think through. And I just wanted to let you in on that process. So I think just being honest and inviting people into the thought process and into the fears and into the parts where it's like, this is a nice perk that I'm enjoying while I'm having to live under this patriarchal society. And this is why, because it took a load off because of me having to add a load over here. But just raw conversation, I think, goes really, really far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I appreciate that example. I mean, I do this every week. You know, I talk about gender and sexuality for a living with dozens of clients every week. And yet I am still so blind to so many aspects of what it is like to be a woman in America. I mean, my partner kept taking her car to the same shitty repair shop over and over. And I couldn't figure out, like, why is she doing this? They are so awful. They are such a frustration. And it took me forever. She even had to explain it to me kind of a couple of times before it registered with me, or I remembered that she goes here because this is the only place where nobody has been like a sexist asshole towards her, or tried to make a pass at her just while she's trying to get her oil changed, or whatever else might be going on.
Yep. Yeah. There's so many little things like that. I kept coming home with my tank on E, and it was because we had moved to a new part of the city, and none of the gas stations I went to, I had felt safe at. I had even tried to go get gas, and was getting catcalled, and it was night, and I was just like, I'm getting out of here. And then finally I was able to tell my partner, like, actually, I really hate going to get gas in this city right now until I find a gas station that I feel comfortable with. And they were awesome, and they went to go get gas for me. But yeah, it's little things like that that add up, and even interactions with our partners. Sometimes they're going to be sexist and not know it. And to say, hey, that, can I explain to you how that just went for me, or how this feels in the bigger picture, or how you treated my friend in this, or how you talked about a woman just now? I think those things are so important. And then those micro conversations of just bringing awareness to stuff is how we see change.
Yeah. And I'll really encourage everybody listening to this tonight, but I suppose especially the women, to feel empowered to have those conversations. Like, you are not being an asshole for calling out a particular behavior, even if you're calling it out in like a particular person or a particular instance. There are just so many things that I myself have acknowledged I'm completely oblivious to. I mean, why does my partner always insist that I'm the one who goes into the gas station when we need something? Oh, well, it's because I can just walk right in and walk right out. And until that was pointed out to me, it was, again, something I was totally unaware of. And I think it's valuable to be willing to spend time with these ideas.
Absolutely.
So we're going to be talking more about patriarchy. But before we do, I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about sort of the messaging on these topics. You know, I'm assuming that you are at the stage of notoriety or ignominy, I guess, where you're generally kind of over being called like a shrew or a feminazi in the comments section. But how can we all do a better job of getting through to people who insist that, you know, feminism is going too far, or that, you know, people are just trapped in a victim mentality? How do we get through to these folks?
Yeah, I think there's some people that we're just not going to get through to at the end of the day, at least not at this stage where they're at. So I'm really protective over myself, and I will block people. I will delete comments when I need to. I have no problem doing that. I'm not here to give a platform to people that are stuck in their sexism and don't want to learn and don't want to hear anything. I think another is just uplifting the voices of other women and other, really anyone that doesn't fall under the category of a cishet man, I think is a great way, just sharing those voices. But yeah, in general, I'm not so interested in trying to change the minds of people who are not interested in listening at this point. I'm here for people that are at least curious enough to quietly listen, even if they don't have anything encouraging or nice to say. If they can just sit back and maybe like approach what I have to say with some curiosity, that's enough for me. But if someone is already going to argue back against my basic human rights, I don't want to entertain that conversation anymore.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. And just from a psychology standpoint, whether we're looking at like the trans-theoretical model of change or motivational interviewing or any of these different frameworks, I think we can say very broadly that it's just not useful to argue with people who have no interest in being convinced. That
right.
Generally speaking, people dig their heels in much deeper when we try to have those conversations. So maybe that is your message, is to just let the idiots be idiots and to maybe talk to the people you can talk to.
100%. Every now and then, depending on what someone says, if there's like a little bit of an undertone of someone that's potentially almost there, but they're still trying to get out some last little sexist comments or whatever, I try to approach that with a little bit of compassion and understanding. Like, hey, I get this. This is really hard for you to grasp. Let me try to help you. And then if there's not a good response, you're done. I tried. I gave you the benefit of the doubt. But I don't think that that everyone should do that. I think only what you have the personal patience and time for.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's take a moment to touch base with Andrew in Romania, who had some curiosities around pronouns. And then we'll get back to the conversation. Andrew, what can we do for you tonight?
Oh, hi. You know, I know I have a topic, but I can add to the discussion, to the topic.
Sure. Yeah. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, you know, growing up in Romania, I've noticed that you know, there is sexism, sure, but I know it's kind of muffled here. People generally don't talk about it. I mean, I'm not sure there's any other country that's so passionate about things as the U.S. One thing I noticed is that I mean, I have a few female friends. They usually don't complain about things they had to endure. That's not to say that they don't go through things that I don't understand, but usually they say, because I'm a girl, I get certain advantages. What I have noticed, which is a trend that really upsets me, is a mentality that both men and women share in this country. Where they say that I'm a girl or I'm a woman and I should be allowed to do this or I should be allowed to go first or something like that. And what upsets me about that is that that hurts women the most, because it implies that, you know, they're inferior in some way or they have a disability. But people don't realize this, you know.
I think that that's fair to say. And I do think that there are really valid concerns here around, you know, women always going first and some of these notions. But I have to say the women who are taking advantage of this system are not the ones that I'm concerned about. Those aren't necessarily the folks that I fear are doing like significant, meaningful damage, even if that may be a factor. I mean, does that all feel fair, Andrew?
No, I agree with you, but it's not just about these women. It's about the men who instill these, you know, values, let's call them, into women. Because I heard, I hear fathers say that to their sons, hey, leave her alone, she's a girl, something like that. But yeah, it's not, sure, it's not a big concern. I heard what you were discussing about, and I agree. But again, everything here is kind of muffled, even gay rights. For instance, we had a referendum of some sort in 2018, I believe, or 2019. Something about making marriage about a man and a woman, and it was rejected. So people here kind of have this baseline of, you know, we don't really care that much, which is not a good thing, but... Like I said, we don't, we're not that passionate about things like in the US.
Yeah, I mean, anyway. Whenever I hear that nobody is talking about a problem, I start to think like, oh, good, maybe there's no problem, but also maybe just nobody's talking about the problem. So
yeah.
Probably a little bit of a mixture of both, I would say.
No, there's definitely a problem. Well, there's something I heard about racism. Someone was talking about racism in the United States. They were saying that... The biggest problem today is not that there's an active let's say, hatred of black people, but that younger people just ignore black people problems, and that's bad in and of itself.
That willingness to just kind of let the system churn on as it is and to turn a blind eye to all of this. I mean, that's very much integral to the conversation that we're having tonight. But let me ask you about the question that you called in for tonight. What is it that you wanted to check in with us about?
Oh, yeah, no problem. I was gonna come to that in a second. So there's this thing you do on all the ACA shows. I'll be honest with you, I don't watch Secular Sexuality. This is actually my first time listening to the show. I usually watch the Atheist Experience, but I noticed this trend, let's call it, about choosing your preferred pronouns at the start of a conversation. And I have to mention this. I'm pretty familiar with, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is for the benefit of trans people?
I mean, yes, but really no. I would say it's for the benefit of people, and yeah. I think it's going to particularly support vulnerable people, which are oftentimes trans. Let me just go ahead and jump in, since we talked about this on the show very recently, and I think I know where you're going with all of this. And it's really just to say the pronouns are here to remind people that you cannot tell somebody's gender identity simply by looking at them. It's mm-hmm. also to make sure that the performers, the people who are on the shows, have their gender identity appropriately recognized. It's not about letting people know what words we prefer. It's about allowing other people to see us correctly. And especially because we are doing all of this in this very unnatural, sort of bizarre, arbitrary. I mean, we're like right now, I have access to like 10 different voices in my earpiece. And to be honest with you, I don't often know who all of them look like, or I can't necessarily distinguish everybody's names. And now I'm talking to a stranger over the phone in Romania. I'm not entirely sure what city Eve lives in. And I know that there is an audience watching us all over the world. So our sort of like natural, if we want to call it that, human patterns for how to address people, how to introduce ourselves, that notion of living in a band of like 150 people, all of that is broken. All of that is gone. And so we have to adapt to it. And if we want people to see us with any sort of accuracy, our culture, our technology, our society is going to evolve in some interesting ways and come up with some different methods for doing that. And giving our pronouns on the screen is just one strategy for helping human beings recognize and understand one another. How does all that land with you?
Yeah, it's interesting. You see, I don't have a point. I was really just curious because there are some other things I should mention. First of all, I'm autistic, so sex and sexuality and sexual identity was never really that big a part of my life. Mm-hmm. So I'm just trying to understand this because, you know, on the Atheist Experience, they often talk about trans people and especially trans women. They tell their stories about how when they were young, they always felt like a girl, let's say. And I started thinking about this, you know. So I started thinking about myself, like, what do I feel like? Do I feel like a man or do I feel like a woman or what do I feel like? And to be honest with you, I don't really feel like anything. I mean, I'm a man. I'm happy to be a man, but I don't know. I could say that I don't really have a gender, or I don't really care that much. So basically, that's why I'm asking the question. Not because I'm trying to imply anything or
No, and I appreciate that. But I might express it this way. It is wholly possible that you are, quote, agender, that you don't have a gender, and that's why you don't really experience it. It could also be the case that there is a certain level of numbness or disconnect, which, if it's not causing a problem, I don't think we necessarily need to see as an issue. But I might also point out that you don't really notice that you're wearing shoes when your shoes fit well. It's when you try to shove your foot into a shoe that is not the right size that you become incredibly aware of it every step that you take. And so the fact that you feel like you don't have a gender may be because your body, the way that your culture, the way that the people around you recognize you and interact with you, lines up and fits with who you actually are. And when that's not the case, it becomes a lot more noticeable.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that's a great point. I recall a blog post about a trans woman who said something on the lines of, once I got my vagina, I stopped caring about it, something like that, because it was a concern when she didn't have a vagina, but after the operation, it was just not a concern for her anymore.
Yeah, once I got the padded socks, all of a sudden my shoes were just the right size. Like I can totally appreciate that.
Yeah, but think about me is that I don't really fit all the male gender stereotypes. I guess. I mean, I'm violent sometimes, I suppose. that's how men are generally, but. It's not something I choose to do. It's just, I don't know, my hormones or something. I don't like sports. I don't like cars. So it's, you know.
Definitely maybe, a lot to unpack there. I would say that there is certainly more to being a man than liking sports. And that, you know, violence might not be something that necessarily can be tied to gender. But generally speaking, I appreciate your willingness to be curious about these topics. And I think I would only insert before we let you go that regardless of how you feel about these things or what you understand of them or what your personal experiences are, I hope that you are willing to make space for other folks having different experiences and recognize that your own identity, your own fit, your own feelings are far from universal, even on something that seems really fundamental like gender.
Oh, sure. So before I go, I wanted to ask one more question. So what does define a gender? I mean, what would define me as a man? Because isn't this all about how society interprets a certain gender?
Yes and no. You know, we attempted to answer that question on last week's episode or 2 weeks ago, I guess, last time I was on. And the answer we kind of came back to was like, I don't know. We talk about this for like hours every week, and I don't really know. Certainly, there is a lot more than I don't know when it comes to like gender theory and all of these other topics. You can spend an entire career barely scratching the surface on some of what has been written and everything else. But yeah, I don't think anybody can really tell you what it means to be a man or what your gender is going to feel like. I'd encourage you to be curious. I'd encourage you to explore, to hear about other people's experiences, to maybe dive into some of the academic thought and some of the scholastic work on these topics. But I can't really tell you what gender is, and certainly not what yours is.
Okay. Well, thank you. It's been lovely talking to you.
Hey, appreciate you so much. I hope you have a great night.
Thanks, Andrew.
All right. Well, let's take a quick moment and see what's been going on around the rest of the ACA.
Sex in the shower is just like, hey, what if we take one of the most pleasurable acts in the human experience, but one of us will be freezing cold and the other one will be uncomfortable? How about we do that? Any takers?
Yeah. Or there's a hope for me in the afterlife, a reward for being that. Like I don't need that to do what I do. If anything, I think those ideas limit human potential. I don't think we have to be the subjects of a divine creator to have meaningful relationships with people.
There is the Christianity aspect, there's the nationalism aspect, and there's the big ass guns aspect. Although that Christianity bit, they might want to close read it, because I don't think Jesus mentions guns that often.
There are so many famous magicians out there that are also well-known like skeptics, and it's like, just because you're a magician doesn't mean that you're a skeptic, and vice versa. Like, I'm a skeptic, but I definitely cannot do magic.
You can't see me from the waist down, but from the waist down, I'm actually a lizard, and I can lay eggs, and I can run faster than a cheetah as a result of my very powerful lizard legs. Would you just accept that? Or would you be skeptical? What do I have? I need something physical to hold in my hand. So, like, this is species one of my lip gloss. And then species one of my lip gloss produces species two of my lip gloss. And species two can produce with species one, but then species three comes up here. Species three can produce with species two, but not species one. These two can reproduce together, but this one can't go all the way back to the first one, which we've already said is basically genetically identical with a slight iteration. That's that is genetics. One.
Okay, well, I wrapped up with Alex a little bit fast so that we could talk to Everett in Michigan, who had a very similar question. Everett, what's on your mind tonight?
I just wanted to ask about, like, how do you figure out certain parts of your identity? Because right now I'm kind of like in that moment where I'm trying to discover certain parts of my identity.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I would say that the best ways are really through what I'm going to maybe call the looking glass self. This idea that you can best understand yourself by seeing how other people see you. And that doesn't mean that other people get to define you or get to tell you who you are, but I would encourage you to interact with other folks and to see how do they see their gender? What does it mean for them to see themselves as a man or as a woman or as some of these other identities, and then to talk about perhaps how they see you and how that resonates or doesn't resonate with how you see yourself. Certainly, there are some incredible books, and I might point you first and foremost to How to Understand Your Gender by Meg John Barker and John Ifinetti. But really, it's a question that you ask yourself as rigidly and as often as you choose to, and hopefully not any more than that. Eve, do you have anything to add there?
Yeah, I think also, you know, one of the most enjoyable parts about life is experiencing it. And so as much fun as it is to be able to find an identity and really hone in on who you feel you are, I think it's also okay to be in that place of questioning and enjoy that time too, and not feel like you have to put a label on it or rush to any conclusions about yourself, or even feel stuck or married to something specifically. Just enjoy getting to know yourself, and like Christy said, through the eyes of others and through your own eyes as well. One of my favorite things to do lately is to take myself on a date, go to my favorite spot by myself, order a drink, and sit with myself and kind of examine my interactions with the servers there, examine my interactions with, you know, the other stranger next to me at the bar, and get to know myself that way. So I would encourage you to maybe find some things like that as well that you enjoy doing on your own to get to know yourself and enjoy yourself. And I think identity oftentimes comes from that place as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. What was I going to talk about again? Hang on a few seconds.
Yeah, right. that's all right. I know this can be a little bit nerve-wracking, and gender is one of those like nebulous things that's really difficult to wrap your mind around.
Yeah.
What was your question?
But also, how do you identify when you're like experiencing an attraction to someone? Because personally, I've looked at pretty women online and got like this great feeling of like, I want to snuggle this person, but I don't feel like wanting to have like sexual, like anything sexual, or like even kissing them on the mouth. But I'm still not sure. Is that just wanting to snuggle someone randomly? Like maybe because I didn't have a positive motherly figure and it's me wanting to have one? Or is it actual romantic attraction?
You know, who's to say? I think you are. And it's okay if the verdict is still out. You know, I would say that oftentimes, or sometimes anyway, we can sort of look at our desires, at our experiences, and try to run those to ground and say, oh, well, yes, it makes sense. I had this experience in high school, and that's why I now have a banana kink, or whatever the silly thing is. But for the vast majority of time, it's usually best to just sort of accept that this is how I feel, that this is what I want, that this is what I think. And we don't necessarily need to run those things to ground or to like force them to justify their existence. Certainly, we want to be maybe curious about our instincts and questioning some of our desires without necessarily judging them. But as far as, is this attraction? Is this romantic attraction? Is this, you know, whatever else? How do we describe it? How do we define it? I don't know that anybody can honestly answer that question other than you. That being said, if you would like to tell me maybe a little bit more about your experience or about what it is that you're feeling and thinking and what that looks like for you, we might be able to kind of pull that apart and suss that out together.
Usually it would be like, okay, scrolling through Twitter or some other online thing, boom, attractive woman pops up. And I'm like, oh, they're pretty. I would snuggle them and give them snacks.
Yeah. I mean, what you're describing could be admiration. You know, it could be even a form of maybe envy. You know, oftentimes I will talk to folks who are making these discoveries around their gender or around their orientation. And as we start to get into it, they start to realize, oh, I wasn't necessarily attracted to that person. I wanted to be that person, or sometimes vice versa. What I can really say, or the only thing that I would really feel comfortable saying definitively in any kind of meaningful way, is that if you are respectful and kind and communicative, that you're allowed to explore these things with other people and see how you feel, to maybe kiss somebody and see if you enjoy kissing them, to maybe go on a date with somebody and see if you enjoy going on a date with them. You're not like, making a promise or a commitment.
Let us kiss, see if we gay.
I mean, you know, there's certainly some value in it. I don't care who you are. If you've never decided to suck a dick, if you've never decided to kiss a man or a woman or tried some of these different experiences, I would want to know why. You know, there's only so much life that we get on this planet, and to miss out on some fundamental aspect of our humanity or of your identity because you weren't curious enough to try, I would definitely encourage people to be brave here.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for giving us a call. You have a great night.
Thanks, Everett.
You too.
All right. Well, let's hit one more phone call if we can, and then I promise we'll get back to this conversation. Yeah?
Sounds great.
Awesome. All right. We're going to talk to Red in Ohio. Red, what's on your mind tonight?
Hi, Red.
Hello. I just wanted to call you guys because I was thinking about this. This is something I think about constantly.
Yeah, what is that?
My family always called me a tomboy, and I remember always hating it, even to this day. So I kind of wanted to discuss how calling somebody a tomboy is potentially sexist to that person. I consider it to myself if somebody calls me a tomboy to be kind of sexist, because I, whenever it was like talked to me about that, it was kind of in a passive aggressive derogatory term, because my parents are very Christian. It's like, oh, you know, she's a tom girl. Like, it was something
we just have to deal with it. Yeah. And I hear it. I think the most important piece here is just what it feels like when somebody else insists on describing our aesthetic or describing our gender when it's contrary to what we feel and experience.
Right.
So whether the term tomboy or any of these other ideas are inherently problematic or sexist, which I think there is an interesting case to be made there. But even setting that aside, just the simple fact that somebody would say that they know more about you and your identity than you do, that's always going to rankle, right?
Yeah, that's probably the biggest reason why I kind of get mad when people call me a tomboy. I know I'm not like, I recently discovered I don't fully identify as a girl. I'm a demi girl, so I don't identify fully as a she or a he. I'm just she, they, like it says on my call screen. But when growing up, I didn't know about all these genders. And I didn't know why I was so angry when people called me a tomboy or like that, because I didn't know really who I was then. But I also didn't like being called a tomboy, even though that's what describes me best back then, because there wasn't really another word back. There wasn't, I never even heard of demi girl when I was growing up. I don't even know if it was a thing when I was younger or what, but I feel like demi girl is is a much nicer term and something that you can identify with more than tomboy, because to me, tomboy just sounds derogatory, and I just don't know if it's one of those words that has been used in a bad way, and if it's a word that we can start using in a more positive way to get it to mean something positive. But again, I don't know. I personally wouldn't use tomboy to describe myself just because of past notions with it, but sure. I don't know how other people feel about it.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely sounds like one of those words that can be used as something of a slur. And, you know, if you don't believe that anything can be a slur, just imagine your shittiest relative saying the nationality of somebody from a different ethnicity, right? There is so many opportunities to put a derogatory spin on these things, particularly when we're talking about gender identity and some of this stuff. But I don't know. Eve, do you feel like this term is inherently problematic or universally problematic?
I think it's subtly problematic. When I think of the term tomboy, I think of a term that we often would use to describe a young girl who doesn't fit exactly society's idea of what it means to be a young girl, because we typically don't use tomboy to describe older people. And to me, it's a phrase I heard a lot in the 90s. I was called that. And it was something that was said to me if I was, you know, wearing overalls and rubber boots that day instead of a girly dress like my sister's, or it was something that was said if my hair was disheveled like a boy's. You know, it was these very binary, girls are like this, boys are like this. And so if you don't fit this exact little girl look, then we're going to call you tomboy, to kind of explain it away instead of just making room for me to just be a kid. And so I think that's why I have, because this term tomboy is, I've thought about this a lot, actually, I have such a problem with it, just because I think it can come across as derogatory. But more than anything, I think it's trying to identify kids as these things where they're just existing as little humans that are, you know, not even, I wasn't trying to identify any particular way when I behaved in those ways or dressed in those ways or had the friends that I had at the time. And still I was called tomboy. So I can totally see how that would feel triggering in a way and really upsetting, because like Christy said, it's taking your identity away from you and having somebody else kind of force their idea of gender on you.
Yeah. Thanks for pointing out the diminutive nature of it, because it is a term that we generally use for kids. And I don't think I noticed that, but we as a patriarchal society do really like to infantilize not just little girls, but also young women. And I think that term can really be used in that way.
Yeah. And another problem is tomboy, I think most people don't think of it as derogatory. Like, it's considered, if anything, like a little quirky way to reference a young girl. But then a little boy, if he were behaving in a way that they would not deem as manly for a young boy, which is already ridiculous, they'd say something like he's being girly or whatever. And that is absolutely meant as a derogatory term. Mm-hmm. So it's, again, the whole patriarchal thing where being a tomboy is almost like this cool, like, oh, nice, you're dad's little tomboy. Like, that's cool. Like, that's okay to have the same kind of character.
You can drive a tractor.
Boots. Yes. So suddenly you're better. But if you're girly, if you're a little boy being girly, like you're crying sissy or you're displaying emotions, yeah, you're a sissy. And that shows already like how the patriarchy negatively affects men and women equally. Not in the same ways, but as far as it impacts
a lot in culturally. Mm-hmm. Me and my brother didn't grow up in the best of households. So I guess that's why I was have a bit of think negatively towards those terms for people. I've been watching the chat and I see that some people actually identify as a tomboy, and I do think that's great if they see it as a positive thing. I wish I could, but with how my past is, I just can't. Or else I might be okay with somebody calling me a tomboy, but it just goes back to me thinking how my parents viewed me and how they wanted me to be a certain way and all that, and just kind of put that label on me themselves instead of me figuring out for myself. And what you're saying about, like, I was a kid and I didn't know how to identify myself then. I was just living. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it was fair to be have an identity attached to me when I didn't have the tools or even at that age, the thought process to even identify myself at the time. So yeah, that's definitely going to make me think a lot more about this.
Yeah. Well, you're circling around something that is, I think, in many ways, very, very obvious, but so obvious that it kind of becomes subtle, because the most important piece of this conversation is self-identifying, because that word has a specific meaning to you and a particular set of experiences, and it does and does not line up with your identity and your comfort in so many ways that are unique and particular to you. And that's why it is just asinine to me that anybody could ever think that they could tell somebody else, no, you're this. I saw your driver's license. I saw your underwear. Like, I know who you are, because we are all so unique. We have all had these different experiences, and we aren't just inventing labels when we're trying to find ways to describe ourselves accurately. And certainly we're the only ones that can. I'll get off my soapbox here in just a second, but I guess I just want to take a moment to point out to people that for as much as you might read about or hear about or see bad TV shows referencing Freud and Carl Jung and B.F. Skinner and some of these big names of psychology, the most important one, the one that every therapist you've ever worked with or seen, the person that they are most inspired by, I think, is unquestionably Carl Rogers, a name that doesn't get talked about a lot in our society, but is really fundamental and foundational to the world of counseling. And Rogers' entire thing was this notion that people are experts in themselves, that no therapist, no doctor, nobody could possibly know more about you than you do. And that is such a crucial and fundamental idea that our society loves to dismiss. So I really appreciate you giving us a call tonight and letting us kind of kick that around a little bit.
Yeah, I was wondering if it was a good topic or not, because I didn't know if other people felt similarly about that word or possibly other labels on the men's side or people who identify as a men side as for that. I don't know what the other version of tomboy would be. Would it be a tomgirl for them? I don't know. I just always heard tomboy.
Yeah, I honestly, like Eve was pointing out, I think it might be tomboy and sissy, which are definitely not equal yet opposite. There's certainly an indication there.
Yeah.
Well, I'll just say before we say goodnight for the night that if you check the chat for this episode, that there are a lot of people sounding off about their personal experiences with that term tomboy and how it makes different people feel. And I think that that's valid. We're all allowed to have our own relationship with some of these things. It's worth noting that a lot of gender words are actually just recaptured slurs. So yeah. While we want to be like careful and respectful of these things, we're all going to have our own unique experience with them. And so long as we are kind and considerate, I think that's okay.
Yeah, for sure. I do appreciate you guys taking this call, because you guys have said some things that have provoke some more thought into me that I need to look into. And I since I'm kind of new to the sphere of things, I've never was allowed to like think for myself growing up. So I really appreciate what you guys do on here.
Hey, glad to hear it. I appreciate your bravery in sharing this all with us.
Yeah,
you have a great night tonight.
With you.
All right. Well, let's get back into it. We've been playing with all of these sort of like big picture ideas of gender theory and all these like large generalizations. But Eve, do you have any examples for us of some of the like more subtle ways that men as default thinking shows up for women?
Yeah, I mean, it is so subtle that I... all the time, I'm constantly like, oh, wait, rethinking a whole entire conversation I had and realizing the different things that came up. But like I said earlier, just the whole idea of like when someone was telling me about their boss and we assumed that it must be a man, there's just a general direction that I think our brains head in, and that's what we have to pay attention to. Mm-hmm. And kind of stop that train of thought before it even continues. There's the problem is that there's so many subtle things. Like, is it sexist that a guy is opening the door for me each time? No, I don't think it's sexist. I think it's part of the patriarchy, and it's like this system that's been set up that that's one of the very small benefits. although I personally started leaping for the door first, for me, that's empowering to sure. be like, hey, I can get the door too. And I love doing little small acts like that. So why can't I start breaking down some of those norms? But yeah, there's little things like that where it's like, is it sexism or is it just part of a pattern that we have stayed in?
Yeah, fair to say. There are so many aspects of these ideas that we just repeat over and over and over without really thinking about it. And it just starts to be taken for granted that this is the way it's supposed to be. We did a episode with Forrest Falcai a couple of weeks ago talking about how there are so many things that we just assume are part of our biology and innate right. to our humanity that are really just culture and don't even exist, you know, a couple hundred miles down the road, let alone right. universally in all of human.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's also a big part of deconstructing from all of this is learning about other cultures, like getting outside of the way that you grew up. Even for me, I grew up in the South. So seeing how they do things just a few states away, or you know, I lived in California for a time, that already expands your mind so much. You know, nonetheless, learning about cultures from other countries hundreds of years ago, where sometimes they were a lot more progressive than we are even now. You know, there's tribes where they were matriarchal. That was a big thing. And a lot of that has been erased from our history. So getting back to that, I think that's a great way to recognize the subtle bits of sexism and patriarchy that we see day to day is by examining new ways to do things and seeing how what we're doing now doesn't fit into that. And why doesn't it?
Yeah, I think there's incredible value in travel and in understanding history and just looking at these different worldviews. I mean, I'll be honest, I have a 14-year-old and I am terrified of the world that he is coming into. And when we were talking to him about going on his first like airplane ride and trying to show him the world a little bit, and he was like, why can't I just stay here? Like, what's wrong with just staying here? It made me feel really, really terrified that he might grow up in a world that is just confined to Texas, to urban yeah. and rural Texas, when there is so many different other ways to be. And I don't think you can even really realize that, certainly not at that age, without having seen more of the world.
Right. We get in our comfort spaces, and that's human. That's part of how we survive as well. And I think that's how the patriarchy has continued to remain a thing, is that it's made a lot of us comfortable, especially if we're white women. I think it's easy for us to continue perpetuating patriarchy because we've found our place in it and we've stayed in our lane.
We're number two.
Exactly. We've submitted to it and we found the good things that we get out of it. And now we're starting to realize as we're losing rights that other women have never had, we're finally like, well, fuck the patriarchy, when we should have been like that all along and we assisted in upholding it. So recognizing that is a big part of moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm still very intrigued by all of the subtle ways that this shows up everywhere. And I know it's hard to define. It's hard to like sit here and list them off. I, even preparing for this episode, wanted to like put together a list of, hey, is this actually sexist? Is this actually sexist? And I found I couldn't necessarily do that because everything was so subtle in a lot of ways and maybe context specific and everything else. And yet I also find myself being almost maybe a little bit allergic to some of the sexism that I see in daily life. Things that I think I was pretty much immune to and seemed very inert before I started to deconstruct my faith. One thing that's coming up in particular is my partner has recently started leaving on 90-day fiancé whenever she's doing laundry or cleaning the kitchen. And I think 10 years ago, a show like that would have maybe made me go, ugh, this is dumb. But now, even just having it on in the background, I am struck by these just universal assumptions among every voice in the show that, you know, I mean, first and foremost, that of course everybody wants to be an American, but also other assumptions like that all relationships are strictly monogamous or that everybody wants to cheat, but you just can't let them. And so many of these toxic ideas are showing up that it starts to become become kind of uncomfortable to even watch. Have you had that experience?
Absolutely. I notice in a lot of these shows, you'll watch like The Bachelor or 90 Day Fiance, Love is Blind. You'll notice that with the women that are, you know, going through something on the show, they're emotional for one reason or another, usually always, I think, very valid. They'll highlight those moments and portray those women throughout the show that way. They'll show them with tears all the time. And then the few women who maybe don't have moments where they break down, they will villainize them. They will make them the bad guys for behaving how the men on the show will act the entire time, but never be made out to be cold or the villain in any way. And so it's the whole like infantilizing of women. Again, you know, they show the sweet, meek ones that are crying, and, you know, they edit it that way. They rig things different ways on these reality TV shows, but it's painting women in these two different lights, where they're either like these emotional creatures that are submissive and kind of victims of the situation, or they're the bad guy. And there's not really an in between. They don't really give a spot for anybody in between like they do for men. And that those are some of the little ways you'll see it in pop culture come up over and over and over again.
Yeah. And I don't want to like fully police everything that people are watching. I know that we're talking about, quote, trashy reality TV, right, and that people generally turn it on, at least in small part, to kind of laugh at these people. And that may be a little bit problematic, but I'm not trying to be a scold about it. But I guess I'm curious about that experience of just feeling like, ugh, do we have to watch this again? Or just being kind of surrounded by these ideas all the time. As somebody who is like still very unaware of and in many ways unaffected by these things, I'm curious what your experience is are like, and if there are songs or musicians or TV shows that just make you go, I can't today, like I can't deal with that type of bullshit.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think most things, unfortunately, bring that sure. to mind. I think it's been so normalized too that a lot of times I find myself like, man, I love this song, and I'm like, oh, this song is so sexist and so terrible. I hate that I love it so much. But we've kind of been conditioned, like that's all we've had. I'm starting to now purposefully seek out media that is pro women, that is, you know, especially things that have to do like songs lately that have to do with women's pleasure, because that was not a thing for years and years. And if it was, it was considered to be like incredibly crass and shocking. Whereas men,
like every 2 or 3 years, there will be a song where a woman talks about enjoying sex, but it's always like a caricature, like it's so over the top and so raunchy that it's more of a novelty than it is like an actual expression, at least in many cases.
Absolutely. And then that snowballs into more toxicity, and it sucks. But thanks to TikTok, I've been exposed to all these new up and coming artists that are really in touch with their gender fluidity or whatever it may be, and the way that they sing about women and about the pleasure of women, and just the feminine gaze is beautiful. And it's so refreshing to have that and to hear it. And to I love the crass songs too. I really do. I think that's really necessary. But women deserved all of it, not just in that one category.
Right.
As far as shock value, I love shock value songs. Men get all the shock value songs, and they get the like really nice, cool songs. And most of the like makeout songs from the 90s were very much geared towards men and male pleasure. And I feel like now we're finally, you know, getting to see a taste of what it's like when a woman is describing pleasure or happiness or love. And I think movies are trying to move toward that. Shows are trying to move toward that. It's still tough, even as far as what they're willing to show in sex scenes.
Sure.
Of men and their faces and different sex acts. And then
we talked recently, we did an episode about the Motion Picture Association of America and the just consistent criticism that if a woman moans or even makes a facial expression of pleasure, it's like automatically an R-rated movie, when a guy can talk on and on and on about sexual pleasure and these different things, and it's framed completely differently.
Right. And that impacts not just young people, but all of us. Like we're always taking in media, whether we're trying to or trying not to. We can't get away from it.
Sure.
And I think it impacts us. And I think even more than hearing sexist things. It's the lack of hearing from women. It's the lack of women's voices that slowly kind of erodes and wears away at that equality, because we're not being heard, even when it just comes to basic things like our facial expressions and we're receiving pleasure, things like that, you know, that impacts all of us.
Yeah. So how do we go about amplifying female voices and allowing for like a broader diversity of people speaking without it turning into just tokenism and sort of that same like novelty song type mentality?
That's a great question. I think that you have to do a little bit of seeking out. Mm-hmm. I think that if you're, you know, if I'm trying to read a book on a certain topic that has nothing to do with being a man or a woman or anything, I purposefully will look to see if there is a woman that is an authority on the subject first, because I know that she's probably not going to have her voice as uplifted, as publicized as a man in that field. Generally mm-hmm. speaking, if there's an expert and it's a man, they're going to go with that. So I do think you have to do a little bit of actively seeking out. And that's not to say don't listen to any men at all. It's just to say, like, to expand that, because you're going to be hearing from cishet men all the time, no matter what. A lot of us can't help it in the workplace and our families and all of that. That's going to happen. But we do have to start seeking out people that don't fit into that category, non-binary people as well, looking for anyone that's going to add a twist on the conversation or come at it from an angle that's not patriarchal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What kinds of maybe pet peeves do you have in this space? I, like, for instance, I worked at a job working in mental health. A lot of my jobs over the last decade, I have been, if not the only man, one of the only men. And I worked in an office for a number of years with five women, and it would come up from time to time. Periods. People would want to talk about their experiences. People would need to ask for products. I mean, people have periods. People would want to talk about periods. Right. And it always really frustrated me that there was this sort of like, oh, no, wait, Christy's in the room, or oh, he probably doesn't want to hear this, or oops, sorry, Christy, I didn't mean to say that in front of you. And I can somewhat appreciate where that's coming from, but I also know it really got under my skin. Not that they would want to talk about their bodies, but that they would want to specifically exclude me, or maybe that they would want to protect my poor sensitive ears. And I recognize that is perhaps the smallest possible problem that we're talking about here, right? Like a largely cisgendered man feeling left out or unprivileged in this way is kind of small potatoes. And I have to imagine that there are experiences like that just drive you crazy. I mean, is there anything that stands out tonight?
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's silly little things like that as well. I was just thinking today about how I often hear men say, the wife. Well, the wife uh-huh. wants me home at this time. The wife. I have never, and maybe we should start doing this, I have never heard any of my friends that are wives say, well, the husband wants me home later on today. And it's some of even my more progressive friends. It's just like how we talk. And it's little things like that that are, it's painting their partner as an object, as like this mm-hmm. thing that they, and even the whole idea when men say like, oh, the old ball and chain or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, I hate my wife. Take my wife, please.
Like, right. Yeah. Which is a mockery of the dynamic that's actually in society, which is that it is patriarchal. Men have more access to all kinds of things than we do. They're still an unequal footing in our country when it comes mm-hmm. to men and women. And yet men like to play up this whole idea of, well, I answer to the wife, when usually it's because of very normal things. Like, I have kids at home and I'd like for you to not like leave me alone this yeah. entire time. You know,
we do accept that language. We so normalize yeah. the idea that men are just poor, put upon, struggling creatures right. under the oppressive regime of these women. Yep. And yeah, it feels like only recently has it been in vogue to maybe not have that be 90% of our jokes on a typical, you know, CBS sitcom.
Absolutely. Even the phrase, happy wife, happy life. I sure. hate that so what, much.
What's because... good for the goose is good for the gander.
Yeah. Or,
he's in his man cave. I mean, all of those notions.
Right. It's implying like, let's just keep her happy and then life will be good, as though it's not worth having like struggle and tension and dynamics there and equal conversation and working things through. It's like, no, just keep her happy and then you can go on and do whatever you want.
Get away that, with it, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. There's so much of that that still comes up, I think, in conversation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that a lot of us watching tonight, Knowout grew up in communities and cultures where these ideas were not just assumed, but pretty fiercely enforced. I think it's natural that many of us still carry around a lot of this language and a lot of these assumptions. What would you say to people who are struggling with recognizing their role in all of these things?
If you're struggling, that means you're trying. Mm. So that's a really good start. If you can say that it's difficult for you, that means you're actively looking and you're noticing things. So I think that's great. Somebody who's not actively trying is not going to say it's a struggle because they're going to just not do the work. But yeah, I think that's a great place to start is struggling. Mm-hmm. It's confronting things. I confront sexism in myself, toward myself, you know, that's just,
sure. Yeah.
That's part of this society. That's how ingrained it is in our culture. It's going to be uncomfortable. So get comfortable being uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. And willing to recognize that this is something that all of us are doing. I mean, yes. I don't care who you are, how many books on like gender bigotry you've written, you're still breathing the same air. You're still participating in this culture. And I think all of us are carrying some of this around. So to be naive to that is a huge part of the problem.
Yep, absolutely.
Are there any quick tricks or simple tips that you might recommend for people to become more self-aware, maybe a little bit more careful in noticing some of these things?
Yeah, I think flipping the script and changing up the genders. If you're thinking through a situation, you're like, is this sexist? Flip things around, like replace the man with a non-binary person or replace the woman with a man or whatever, and see like, how does that situation play out now? Like if I say this and I replace, I replace these people, I swap them. Now, how does that feel? I think that's what I have to do a lot is how would this play out if the roles were reversed?
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess I'll just go ahead and curtail the comments section by saying it's not a one-to-one comparison because it's different being a man versus being a woman or some of these other identities, but it is really insightful, right? Especially as just like a quick trick to get a sense of, how does this play?
Absolutely.
Well, are there any particular resources, any shows, podcasts, books, movies that were maybe inspiring to you or that you think might be helpful for others?
I have to give a shout out to TikTok. It can be such a toxic place, but I also love that I get to be exposed to, 15 different women's perspective on a topic in 15 minutes if I want. I think that's important, is being able to listen to the voices of lots of different people. And there's also a really great group of men on there right now that are intentionally trying to uplift women's voices by using their platform for that and reposting that content and, acknowledging ways that they've been sexist and even talking about, hey, today I realized this moment when I was being super sexist in this thing I did and this is what I'm actively working on. I think that's really important for other men to hear. But yeah, TikTok, there's just so many great voices on there. You can go look at my following list. I think I've done a pretty good job curating who I follow and some great voices on there. Just exposing yourself to as many as possible. I think that's what's helped me the most. It's not any specific book or specific podcast. It's just lots and lots of voices and hearing their stories.
Beautiful. Well, if people want to find your TikTok list or find any more of your work online, where can people find you?
Yeah, it's Eve_wasframed. And that's on all platforms. I tried to stay consistent with that. But come hang out with me. We have fun.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, I also want to encourage people to keep up with us here at the ACA. You can keep up with everything that's going on with the ACA at our new and improved website, which is atheist-community.org. You can email this show with sex@atheist-community.org or email the ACA itself with tv@atheist-community.org. You can also keep up with what is going on all of the other shows of the network at tiny.cc/ AEN Podcast. That's your one-stop shop for an audio version of every show on the network. You can find a lot of further notes and details and research on some of the things we've been talking about tonight in the Secular Sexuality Facebook fan group. This is a growing and becoming an increasingly important part of my media diet as folks talk about the show, talk about topics related to the show, and just a good way to be part of the community of the atheist community of Austin. You can also find a number of us in the atheist community of Discord. That's at tiny.cc/ACD Discord. And of course, we would love to encourage you to support the show, to support our community by checking out tiny.cc/merchACA, where we have a number of fine products, including the shirt you see just over my shoulder. I hope that you will take a look and help us continue to keep this operation going. But before we head out for the night, I want to stop and take care of the most important thing we do each week, which is to thank our incredible crew, all of the folks, not all pictured here, who helped to make this show possible. And oh man, it's been way too long since we have had a crew cat. Thank you all so much. Not just the cat, especially the humans, but like also mostly the cat. Thank you all so very much. And Eve, before I get on to thanking you and we step out for the night, I wanted to give you a chance to offer any sort of final thoughts for the audience or any last impressions you'd like to leave tonight.
Yeah, I think if any of this conversation made you feel uncomfortable or had things come up, lean into that. That's what I would ask that someone do. And just dig deeper and listen to more people, not just Christy and I. I think the more you learn about patriarchy and sexism, the less uncomfortable you'll feel having these conversations.
Yeah, fair to say. Well, I suppose all that's left to do is to encourage people to go out there, and whether you are a tomboy or a demigirl, to grab your goose or grab your gander and give yourself a big old orgasm. Or,
love it.
Better yet, give somebody else one.
Watch Talk Heathen live Sundays at 1 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/ytth and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callth.